Hey guys, welcome back to another episode, part three of our Joseph character series. Let's go, whoop whoop. I have my both me and Zach just said nothing and let you take that. Sorry, carry on. To my left, I have the zealous.
Oh,
Zach. Wait, did you want me to say my own name?
Yeah.
I thought because you said zealous. Hey, I'm zealous Zach.
Let's go. And incredible
Izzy.
Oh, sorry, I can't do that. Okay, to recap from 37 to 41.
Tell us.
Joseph, favorite of his dad, gets sold off by his brothers because they're like, you're a little rat.
Oh my god.
You're telling us your big dream and you think we're gonna like bow down to you. And then he gets sold off into Egypt, into Potiphar's house. He's in charge of that. And then his wife, Potiphar's wife's like, oh my gosh, you're so I want to sleep with you. Almost gets into a scandal. But man runs away. He flees from that sin.
Yeah, he does.
From that temptation.
My boy.
He runs away. He gets chucked into prison. And then he is in charge of his prison ward. Whoa, crazy. And then there's the cupbearer and the baker. And they both have dreams. And then he interprets them correctly.
Dream.
Fact.
And then Pharaoh has a dream. And he's like, oh my gosh, I don't know how to interpret this. Everyone around me is like not interpreting it well at all. And then the cupbearer remembers Joseph. Oh my gosh, this geezer, he interpreted my dream so well.
Yeah, he does.
How about you take him, use him? So then he does. And now he's in a position where he is ruling over Egypt because he interpreted Pharaoh's dream correctly.
Second in command, baby.
Second in command.
What a story. Ooh. What a story so far.
That is a story so far.
They should make a movie out of it. Maybe they should make a musical out of it.
Go and sing his bit.
I actually won't because I just won't stop.
That's good self-control.
Thank you.
Cool. Oh, everyone's phone buzzing. Does somebody want to start reading?
I can read.
Yeah, go for it.
Where are we going?
From chapter 42. I'm going to read from the ESV. What translation do you have?
NIV.
Oh, what do you have?
NIV.
NIV.
Dang, I kind of feel left out now.
That's okay.
ESV gang, stand up. Okay. When Jacob learned that there was grain for sale in Egypt, he said to his sons, why do you look at one another? And he said, behold, I have heard that there's grain for sale in Egypt. Go down and buy grain for us there, that we may live and not die. So 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt. But Jacob did not send Benjamin, Joseph's brother, with his other brothers, for he feared that harm might happen to him. Thus the sons of Israel came to buy among the others who came, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. Should I just keep going?
Go for it. Yeah.
Now Joseph was governor over the land. He was the one who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed themselves before him with their faces to the ground. Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them, but he treated them like strangers and spoke roughly to them. Where do you come from? He said. They said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. And Joseph recognized his brothers, but they did not recognize him. And Joseph remembered the dreams that he had dreamed of them. And he said to them, you are spies. You have come to see the nakedness of the land. They said to him, no, my lord, your servants have come to buy food. We are all sons of one man. We are honest men. Your servants have never been spies.
Whoa.
Okay, I feel like just one interesting thing we should probably say is the nakedness of the land does not mean they were looking for naked people. It means I think it's like a metaphor. Is that or an idiom?
That's
it means that they were looking for the weakness of the land. So they were trying to find the spots where potential raiders could come in and steal everything.
Sure.
So he implies, no, you're trying to look for literally the weakness of the land that we live in to steal everything.
Cool. Mm.
And then I feel like a question I have is, did you guys notice that they say we are honest men?
Yeah.
I don't think they're very honest men.
They're not being very honest by saying that comment. I'm sorry. Right in front of his brother that they sold.
Well, I didn't. Well, I think that's...
You're saying you're honest?
This whole section we're like reading, we're about to read, it's all... Like part of it is to all build up towards this reconciliation and the redemption of the brothers, mm. and to see their character transformed from such dishonest and unkind men to being more godly and honest men. Mm. So I think it's really interesting when we're starting to see this language come in, and saying how they're honest men, yet they still obviously have such guilt. Even in the beginning of chapter 42, where Jacob is like, why do you keep looking at each other?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Obviously the word of Egypt sends like shivers down their spine because they yeah. know what they've done. So they still have this guilt. Right. They still have this conscience. Yeah, it's turning towards, I don't know, you just see the little
being
bit of light in it. Yeah.
Because, I mean, yeah, what you're saying is so true. Because I reckon whenever either Joseph's name was brought up or Egypt was brought up, they were probably like reminded of what they've done.
Absolutely.
So they're just like crippled in fear. The fact that they have to now go to Egypt to go get food. They're probably just so scared. But what do you think Joseph was like feeling when he first saw his brothers?
I think it's unimaginable what he would be feeling. It's been, what, 20 years at this point since he's probably last seen them. And I think he has obviously had so much hard work and had so much stuff happen to him that I just can't even imagine how you process that. And maybe he's not processing it in this moment.
Yeah.
In this exact moment, he's probably a bit in shock. And it says that he speaks quite harshly. I don't know what your translation said. Mine said harshly to them. But I think that's also really interesting. I was reading a few commentaries and they were saying that basically, because Joseph's response to them is really interesting and how he treats them as we continue to read. But he isn't just this soft... lets them get away with it and forgives them. He's actually led by the Holy Spirit to actually be a bit harsher to then lead them to this restoration and full restoration and full like redemption in it. But I think it's interesting that that's his response. And he remembers the dreams in that point because this is the fulfillment of his dreams. Like, this is a huge moment, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he had these dreams when he was, 17 years old?
Yeah.
And then here they are 20 years later being fulfilled. And he's watching it happen in front of his own eyes. And actually, like, the brothers sold him into slavery with the pure intention to stop those dreams from ever happening. And then here it is, because of their actions. Because of their actions, it led Joseph into the place he's now in. And these dreams are being fulfilled. Like, they created the way, which also just shows how God can use human actions to still make his plans come through. But who knows what Joseph is thinking in this moment where these dreams he's reminded of, they are fulfilled for the first time. Yay, seeing his brothers who betrayed him so horrendously for the first. I have no idea how he would be feeling.
Yeah.
Zach, what do you think? Oh, sorry, you about to say something.
Yeah.
Michelle, what do you think?
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, imagine, I mean, the fact when Joseph was reminded of those dreams, like that dream coming true, I just, like, I'm just thinking how God, like, God already knew that he would be at this point where his brothers would be doing that. So he knew, like, from the get-go that Joseph would be sold in slavery, going through this, like, rough time. I just think, like, God's in the detail even in our own lives, right? Like, when we try to forecast, like, our future, we try to plan ahead, but then God's already, like, he already knows what's going to happen, whether that's the ups and the downs, and this is just, like, proof of it. Like, he showed Joseph in a dream what would happen. In a more like illustrative way, but again, like, it came to be. So I just think that was awesome. But also, what you're saying, Izzy, is so true, that he probably was feeling mixture of different feelings. He probably was feeling like kind of like relieved to see his family in a way, but then like angry and upset because I mean, he was by himself in Egypt and like going through all these different like situations, scenarios in his life. But like, I feel like you still have some sort of love left for your family.
I don't know what the human response, like, if you take out the like Jesus or God element of it, like, actually, if you're, even if they're your family. If you've been like thrown into slavery, sold off by them, like there was just such pure hatred. It can be so easy for bitterness.
Yeah.
And like, I don't, just because they're family doesn't mean you love them. So I think it's really, but that's God's work in him that he still loves them 100%. Yeah, exactly. I think humanly, I don't think that's natural.
Mm. Yeah. And I think like the way, sorry, I will let you speak, Zach. But, but like him, like, I'm thinking like him maybe speaking harshly to his brothers was maybe a way of him like masking how he actually felt. Because like later on we'll read on how he like has to take himself away because he's like, he has to cry. He just wants to cry and weep because, you know, however he might be feeling. But I don't know. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Anyway, what were you going to say?
I mean, I don't think I really had much to say. I just find it so interesting how he immediately like accuses them, which it almost does seem like he's putting up a front, but it doesn't necessarily allude to what he is truly feeling.
Yeah.
It more just seems like he doesn't want them to know how he's truly feeling. And so he masks it by this harsh, cold exterior.
Yeah.
To almost like buy him time to then figure out what he's actually going to do.
Yeah.
I think we need to keep reading.
Yeah.
And just see what happens, because a lot gets revealed.
You're so good at reading and I hate it. So.
Thanks, man.
That's right.
That laugh gave me the ick. I'm kidding. Okay. From verse 12.
Okay.
He said to them, "No, it is the nakedness of the land that you have come to see." And they said, "We, your servants, are 12 brothers, the son of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is no more." But Joseph said to them, "It is as I said to you, you are spies. By this you shall be tested. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not go from this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of you and let him bring your brother, while you remain confined, that your words may be tested, whether there is truth in you or not. Or else, by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies." And he put them all together in custody for 3 days. On the third day, Joseph said to them, "Do this and you will live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers remain confined where you are in custody, and let the rest go and carry grain for the famine of your households, and bring your youngest brother to me. So your words will be verified, and you shall not die." And they did so. Then they said to one another, "In truth, we are guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the distress of his soul when he begged us, and we did not listen. That is why this distress has come upon us." And Reuben answered them, "Did I not tell you not to sin against the boy? But you did not listen. So now there comes a reckoning for his blood." They did not know that Joseph understood them, for there was an interpreter between them. Then he turned away from them and wept. And he returned to them and spoke to them, and he took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. Wow. And Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain and to replace every man's money in his sack and to give them provisions for the journey. This was done for them. And they loaded their donkeys with their grain and departed. And as one of them opened his sack to give his donkey fodder at the lodging place, he saw his money in the mouth of his sack. He said to his brothers, "My money has been put back. Here it is in the mouth of my sack." At this, their hearts failed them, and they turned trembling to one another, saying, "What is this that God has done to us?"
Whoa. So Zach, do you want to explain to us what's going on there?
Well, Joseph basically says, I think the way I read this is Joseph is now recognizing, okay, these are my brothers. How can I create a situation in which I can understand who they are now, 20 years after I've last seen them? Because I imagine it's almost like he's talking to strangers. Like it's people that you once knew. Like you run into people that you once knew.
Yeah.
You feel like you don't really know them anymore. And so I think he creates this situation where he wants to see how they relate to his younger brother, who's in a similar situation to him when he was younger. So he's the only other brother who is a daughter, or a son, sorry, of the one wife, Rachel.
Yeah.
And so like he's, and he's the youngest. So he's in a similar situation. Joseph says, let me see what they do if I put them in a situation where they have to care for their brother. And it's interesting that he, I think this is sparked, this action is sparked out of a, the key is like the interpreter. So he starts to see that maybe they've had a heart change because he can understand them. So you have to picture like they walk into this massive court and the brothers start speaking to this interpreter because they assume that the governor of the Egyptian land can't speak their Hebrew language. But Joseph, obviously having been of Hebrew descent, does understand their language. And so he can just hear them the whole time. And he sees the backstory of maybe they do actually feel a little bit bad. What can I now do about this?
Yeah, right.
I'm going to keep them here and request that they bring their brother back so I can get a little inside scoop on their relationship.
Must take such strength from him. I think it's, again, like what I mentioned earlier, he's being so guided by the Spirit on how to be an instrument for the correction and restoration of the brothers. And that's like, and it says in chapter 41, 37, where it says how, can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God? Like he was filled with the Spirit of God. And so again, in these a bit bizarre testings that these brothers are going through, we have to believe that that's the Spirit working through him to, be that instrument for correction. And I think you're so right in that moment of, the brothers are speaking in Hebrew and maybe arguing or bickering a little bit or being like, this is all because of what we did. But actually that's showing that they've been humbled and obviously are feeling guilty. Like you can see that in there. You can see their heart where actually at the time they couldn't care less that they were selling their brother off to Egypt. But now like there's, there's a lot that's happened and God has had to do so much deep work in them for them to even get to this point of humility, realizing what they've done, and for their sin to be seen. Like they can only repent if they see their see their sin. And so actually that's Joseph seeing the beginnings of that in that moment.
I think just going off of what you said, it's incredible the toll that I think like almost unforgiveness can take, or like even just sin. Because it's crazy that it's 20 years later and their minds are still going to that when something negative happens. Like it's incredibly weighing on them in a clear way. And I think, I mean, we'll see through the story, I think forgiveness and reconciliation is the answer to that kind of like effect of sin, essentially.
Yeah, from verse 24 to 26, Joseph already, like, I mean, he turns away from his brothers and he weeps because he can like clearly see and hear that like maybe his brothers are like, you know, they're actually sad and remorseful for what they've done to him. But I'm just thinking like how he might have felt in that moment. And like, I mean, he's weeping. So he's clearly like either sad or maybe even tears of like some sort of like, you know, relief that he like finally like, oh my gosh, these guys actually do sort of still care about me. But I'm just like wondering, because I definitely have had moments in my life where if someone's done that to me, where they've been, I don't know, done something and I'm just like, oh, I don't know whether they like think what they've done is wrong. But then they come to me and they like either I hear from somebody else that they're like, oh no, maybe I shouldn't have done that. And it makes me personally feel like, I don't know, maybe do I want to forgive them? Do I want to let this go? I don't know if that makes any sense. But I was just wondering, like, have you guys ever had moments where, like, you know, someone else has been, like, remorse towards you in your lives? And if so, like, how does that make you feel? To sort of sympathize with Joseph in a way? That makes sense. Does that question make sense?
It does make sense. I'm pausing because I think I haven't experienced that. I think the key people in my life that have hurt me either have no idea or I don't think I'll ever get that. And I think part of my journey, and actually what I see a lot in Joseph, is that he's in these 20 years, he's forgiven them a long time ago. Like he's had to. He couldn't be dealing with this now if he hadn't forgiven them yet. And I think for me in my life, I've had to forgive without that closure or without that apology or them even realizing for the big things in my life, I would say. Mm. But I think it's interesting even just imagining, I don't know what I would feel. I would feel so overcome with emotion. Mm. I completely understand. Because those things that you thought you'd never see them again, you thought you'd never hear these words, then these words being said in front of you, I understand why he's so overwhelmed in emotion. And even just probably seeing what God's done in their heart, like that's, again, that's so overwhelming to see and experience, because it's like, wow, they've been changed. And I can imagine what that would feel like, but I don't think I've really seen that in my life. But that's also the joy and hope of what Joseph's story is as well for me. So you said you did have an example. How did you feel in that moment when you have like received that and you feel like people have acknowledged it? How did you feel?
I think them acknowledging it is one thing, but them actually like apologizing from like a place of sincerity is a different thing. Mm. Like they might have acknowledged it, but then their apology doesn't like feel sincere. So I think in that situation, I felt quite like I had to like try to not harden my heart even more, because I'm just like, you're just apologizing because like for the sake of it.
Mm. Yeah.
But I would say most of my experiences are probably similar to you, Izzy, where I haven't had like closure in any like pain or hurt that I've received from other people. But again, like you said, Joseph's story is so powerful in that sense that there is so much hope that God is so faithful to bring restoration and healing, even when we don't see it. And that's why the Bible is here for us to definitely like lean on, to give us hope in the situation. So,
and I think that like you talking about, it's so easy to see the heart harden or soften. And I think we see here just the softness of Joseph's heart.
Yeah.
And even as we read and how he gifted their money back to them and overflowed with grain, were actually even before the restoration, Joseph was generous to them and Joseph gave them love, even when they didn't know who he was. And that shows how soft his heart is, which I think it's very, it's a real person. Yeah. Like, this is a real story. And I think it's like, you know what, if he can do it, so can I. Shall we read on?
Yeah, let's read on.
Okay, so the brothers have discovered on their journey that they have essentially, they think they've been framed for stealing.
You've been framed.
So we continue on in verse 29. When they came to Jacob, their father, in the land of Canaan, they told him all that had happened to them, saying...
Pause. That's a plot twist. So the first time when they came back to speak to their dad, they did not tell the truth at all. They twisted so much stuff. They said that Joseph was been ripped apart on all of this. So even them coming back and explaining this difficult situation and how it's about to put the youngest favored brother at risk, they're now telling the truth this time.
Whoa.
That is... character growth. Continue.
So carrying on the story, the brothers on their journey find the grain and their money in their sacks, and they go back to their father, and they speak to him and tell him everything that's happened, and they just summarize the whole story. And that's pretty much all of verses 29 to 34, and they explain their whole journey. And something that I looked up,
tell me,
was the distance from Canaan to Egypt. I feel like this makes me sound really nerdy.
How long?
It's 480 miles.
Almost like the song.
Come on.
She had to fit in. I know.
She's Scottish.
Oh my gosh.
Well, what? 500?
That's crazy. She's Scottish. But no, in all seriousness, they estimate that it would take 24 days approximately to traverse from Canaan into Cairo, Egypt.
That's a long time.
24 days. Imagine you get framed and then you just have to stay with the people that you're framed with for 24 days, let alone your brothers. Holy smokes. You would have to be a toit family.
Yes.
You'd have to know each other very well.
Long time.
And then you'd, like, I imagine they would just be thinking about, what are we going to tell our father like once the 24 days is up.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's kind of cool that after all of that thinking, they then choose to be truthful.
Which is a plot twist.
Yeah, which is a plot twist. They probably had tons of time to reflect. I mean, 24 days to the T to reflect. Guys, we are losers for doing this.
No, but I think it's true. It's last time when they threw Joseph in the well and they had to come back to say this is what's happened to your youngest son, that they twisted it all and lied. Where this time they have been honest and truthful, which really shows character and heart growth.
Yes, Izzy.
Yes.
Yeah. And then they empty their sacks and the father basically like shames them almost, I guess you could say, for Simeon not coming back, one of the brothers. And he says, my son Joseph is gone, and now you return to me without another one of your brothers.
Yeah.
And he ends this chapter by saying, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, talking about Benjamin, the youngest one, who Joseph requested to come into Egypt. And he is the only one left. If harm should happen to him on the journey that you are to make, you would bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to Sheol. Ends on a really low moment.
So he's basically saying if anything happens to Benjamin, that he will die, which is really interesting. And also it speaks about them being really frightened and even Jacob being frightened. And I think it's really interesting to compare Jacob and Joseph, where Jacob is frightened, saying everything is against him and saying like all these very extreme things and hasn't necessarily learned, you know, from last time of favoring this boy and saying all these extreme things, where he's again saying everything's against him, where Joseph had far worse circumstances, but never took the attitude of everything is against me.
Which
I think is really interesting. And also like them being so frightened, like what are they frightened of? Like, is it their own conscience? Is it that they've received something they haven't deserved? Or is it of Joseph? Like, who really knows? But there's definitely a lot going on in there of that whole family being frightened. And so they kind of basically decided to not go back. And they don't know how long the famine was going to be. So obviously Joseph knew it was going to be 7 years. But this, they probably went out in the first year of famine. So they thought, oh, it will pass and it'll be fine. We'll just leave the bro in jail. Lol. and that was their mindset, but that obviously we know the famine continued, and so the story continues. Shall we try and summarize some sections?
I think we can summarize the first 15 verses.
Go on then, mate.
Basically, they eat all of the grain. So again, a chunk of time has passed. We're now in a next section of the story, the next chapter in 43, and they've eaten all the food. And they're trying to persuade their father, their dad. They say, we need to go back. The famine's still going. We don't have enough grain. We don't have enough food. Let us go back, but we need to take Reuben. Otherwise, he's going to kill us.
Benjamin.
He's literally, sorry. Ugh. I keep getting all these names.
No, you're there. Okay, you're there.
Benjamin. They try and convince him to let Benjamin go with them.
Yeah.
And after a few negotiations, Judah, one of the sons, eventually convinces their father, Jacob, to let them take him. And the way he convinces them is by saying, if we don't bring Benjamin back, it will be like, I'll basically be cursed forever, or you can kill me.
Yeah.
Like he puts his own life on it.
Yeah.
On it. On the fact that he will bring them back. And so then finally.
Which also, character change. Because I think he was one of the key people who first sold Joseph back in the day.
Yeah.
And now he's saying, your favored son, where last time that was a reason why I hated him, now I will protect him with my life.
Redemption arc. So then their father says, okay, you can go back, you can take Benjamin, but also take a gift. So they try and get on Joseph's good side by bringing a gift. And verse 15 says, so they took this present and they took double the money with them. So they're going to return the money. And they went down to Egypt and stood before Joseph.
Doing a fun fact about that.
Go on, tell us.
So there's 10 brothers. I think double the money, they took 20 pieces of silver, which is the exact price they sold him for. 20 years before.
Wait, what?
Something like that. So they first sold him for 20 pieces of silver, and now they're literally bringing that back to him.
That's so crazy.
Please continue to summarize.
Okay,
Zach.
So continuing to summarize, verse 16 to 25 essentially just describes more of the scene. It just sets the layout. So Joseph prepares this massive feast for him and his brothers because he sees that they're on their way. Mm. And the brothers, they arrive before Joseph does to the place that they're going to eat. And they start to lay out the gifts that they've brought to him. And that pretty much takes us up until verse 26. So follow along with us in verse 26. It says, when Joseph came home, they brought into the house to him the present that they had with them and bowed down to him to the ground. And he inquired about their welfare and said, is your father well? The old man of whom you spoke, is he still alive? Can we just pause there? Yeah. They bowed down.
Mm-hmm. That's a dream.
That's the dream.
Another round two.
Do you remember that dream?
I do remember that dream. Do you remember two dreams? That dream?
Yeah.
Two dreams, two bows.
Yeah. And it's like that is, that's like a prophecy. I think one interesting thing is sometimes you have to wait decades. Mm-hmm. For the Lord's word to come to fruition.
Kick in. Mm-hmm.
That can take a really long time.
Yeah.
And patience and trust is key to be able to stay in those waiting periods and not lose faith. And we see that in Joseph, and it ends up coming true, which is kind of crazy. Yeah. But then another kind of really cool plot detail is that the very thing that set this whole story into motion was this exact moment.
Yeah.
The brothers wanted to avoid this exact moment.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's come full circle. This, we can cut this if we want to. One of my favorite quotes from Kung Fu Panda.
Okay.
One often meets his destiny on the road he takes to avoid it.
Wow, that does apply.
Totally applies. This is, were you being sarcastic?
I wasn't. I'm deadly serious.
They try to avoid what the Lord says is going to happen through Joseph's dream, and in avoiding it, it comes true.
Yeah. Oof. Fulfillment of prophecy. And I love how you like briefly touched on how it can take decades for like a prophecy or like a word that God has said for it to come to fulfillment in our lives. And that's so relevant to us now. Like God did a lot of work both in Joseph and his brothers, a lot of character work, character development and heart work. And I think God often does that with us when it comes, like, we can feel like we heard like God say something in our lives, but like, oh no, wait, God told me that this was going to happen. And when it doesn't happen in the time frame that we give it, we get disappointed.
Yep.
And we can get angry with God.
Absolutely.
But like, it takes longer than that. Like, as we can see, sometimes it can be quicker, but also sometimes it can be longer than we might have expected it. But God is like in the detail. Like, he knows exactly what is good for us. He knows when it's right for us to receive it, when our hearts are right. Like, he cares more about our character and our heart and our development than he does the ultimate outcome. Obviously, the outcome's great, but also he cares about the journey too. So
for sure.
Yeah.
Keep going, Zach.
Keep going.
You're our designated reader today.
I'm here for it. verse 28. They responded and said, your servant, our father, is well. He is still alive. And they bowed their heads and prostrated themselves. Again, it emphasizes that posture, that fulfillment of the prophecy.
Yeah.
And he lifted up his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and said, is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke to me? God be gracious to you, my son. Then Joseph hurried out, for his compassion grew warm for his brother, and he sought a place to weep. And he entered his chamber and wept there. Then he washed his face and came out, and controlling himself, he said, serve the food.
Well,
it's crazy because he's only up until this point been interacting with his half brothers.
Yep.
And now he becomes overwhelmed with emotion once again when he sees his brother of full blood.
Yeah.
That must be incredible. You imagine you're separated from your younger brother for 20 years.
I'm assuming, I don't know the age of Benjamin, but I'm assuming they grew up a little bit together.
I think, yeah. Right?
And then, close in age, surely.
Pardon?
Close in age.
Yeah, surely. I would assume so. So I'm assuming they would have
right.
grown up and probably been quite tight, as you say, because they have the same mother. So that must, mm. again, be very powerful.
And it makes sense that if he was the youngest at the time, he would have changed the most mm. over the 20 years.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that then Joseph has to say, is this Benjamin
yeah.
who is your youngest brother?
Let's keep going.
But just deep, man. Deep.
Deep, so deep, deep, deep.
I'm deep in it. Deep in it.
And they served him by himself and them by themselves and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves because the Egyptians could not eat with Hebrews, for that is an abomination to the Egyptians. And they sat before him the firstborn according to his birthright and the youngest according to his youth. And the men looked at one another in amazement. Portions were taken to them from Joseph's table, but Benjamin's portion was five times as much as any of theirs. And they drank and were merry with him, or were intoxicated.
Lol. That is wild, though. Like, you might, they still don't know this is Joseph. And so for them to be, the odds for them to be sat 11 brothers in chronological age order, like, is wild.
What? I didn't even clock that.
Yeah. So they're probably like, well, how does, so that already for them is like astonishing. But then also that them giving Benjamin's portion five times the amount is another test of actually, again, giving that youngest son the favor. And Joseph is seeing how they respond to that.
Yeah.
So, because, yeah, because, again, he knows how they responded to Joseph's favor. So it's him wow. seeing their response to Benjamin this time instead. And, oh, I had a little quote that I was like, that's a challenge.
Go and tell
us. If we fail in a test somewhere, God will make arrangements for us to take the test again another time.
Oh, my
so,
gosh.
So like, that was almost like an opportunity. Well, it was an opportunity, again, for Joseph to see their heart and to lead yeah. to that restoration moment.
Say that again. That was really
the quote.
Good.
Yeah. If well, I don't know. Like, I was just. I don't know if it's like it's not from the Bible, but still. Anyway, if we fail in a test somewhere, God will make arrangements for us to take the test again another time.
Mm. Listen, I think one of the things I've learned and a mindset of mine that has changed while I've been a Christian mm-hmm. the most, like especially over the past few years, is God's disciplinary love.
Yeah.
I think is so special.
Yeah.
Where he holds us to such a high standard with a balance of grace.
Yeah.
Like who else would require you? Like he won't just leave you at a point of failure.
No.
But he'll build up your character time and time again.
Yeah.
Even if you continue to fail, he's going to lovingly give you another opportunity to stand up.
Kind enough to meet you in that place, but not to leave you there.
Mm. Oh, she ate that.
Oh, that actually wasn't mine. I can't take credit for that. Right, we've got one whole chapter left. Let's blitz through this bad boy.
Mm.
Blitz.
Well, one thing I noticed was it distinctly mentions the separation between the Egyptians and the Hebrews, which almost alludes to, I think, like you see that that clearly eating with people is a level of intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
That I think in our Western culture is not recognized as much, but it points to the fact that if that's a point of intimacy, that Joseph invites them on their second time around to a point of intimacy.
I have a really interesting point about this, which is kind of half linked, but not. But I'm going to go into it anyway. Oh. So basically, it's the cultural time is that the Egyptians just didn't mix with the Hebrews at all. Mm. And so, and as Joseph appeared as an Egyptian to his brothers, he couldn't eat with them. But to the Egyptians, because he was raised Hebrew, he wasn't a full Egyptian, so was also separate to them. So that's why they're all separate. But what's interesting is if you look in the grand scheme of God's plan and bringing Jacob's family into Egypt, it's basically taking them out of this place of Canaan, which actually is quite like, it comes up in the Bible quite a lot, of quite a place filled of lots of, but instead bringing them, bringing them into Egypt, into a place where the Egyptians would not mix with the Hebrews. So actually is keeping this like Hebrew family in, like that's part of the law was like to, you know, keep it, I don't know how to say that properly, but to not mix with the Egyptians and to keep God is your one God and not these other idols or gods that the Egyptians had in their culture. So even part of the Egyptians not mixing is all part of God's like overall plan, which are like, you see a little bit of that just even in the eating cultural habits.
Yeah.
And I found that interesting.
That's super bit interesting.
Random from this story, but
no, I think that's really cool.
Wow.
Onwards,
good and faithful steed. Sorry. In chapter 44,
yeah,
Joseph tests his brothers.
He does continue to test.
So the brothers then stay the night. And during the evening, Joseph commands one of his servants. He says, I want you to, again, return everything to them. But, plot twist, this time you're going to take my cup, which I assume was like just super bedazzled or something. Yeah.
Bedazzled. Some rhinestones on it.
But like nice, like professional bedazzled, you know what I mean? Like diamond bedazzled. And he takes the cup and he puts it in Benjamin's sack, the youngest brother.
The final test.
So the point of this, as we see in this chapter 44, is to see what happens when I put the youngest brother in a position where he could be taken advantage of, essentially, thrown into prison. How will the brothers respond? And so he puts it in his bag. They all go, and as they reach the outskirts of the city of Cairo, they realize that they have this cup. Mm-hmm. And Joseph sends someone after them to essentially go and say, you have my cup, and bring them back so that the framing has been completed.
It has been framed.
And the test is of the hour.
Absolutely. And this is that final test. Again, Joseph seeing, as you were saying, how they respond to their youngest one being framed. Mm. And I think it's interesting where, again, in the past, where Joseph was favored and they threw him in a well, where this time when Benjamin was accused and wrongly, they all trusted each other. Mm. They knew that this wasn't fair, yet their response was, they tore their clothes, actually, which was like an extreme expression of like, as if grief of the thought of losing their brother was as if he had died, as if there was a grief going on. And that shows the extent of their love and how their heart had changed. And I think this was just, it was Joseph's tests of their heart, the brothers, and it brought them to that complete repentance where even though they were actually, it wasn't quite just in this situation, but their response was to humbly come and as an offering to be like, no, we need to protect this boy. We need to, like, this isn't right. And their response, instead of going from with Joseph of throw him in the well, it's we care. If you take Benjamin, it's as if we're all dying.
Yeah.
Mm. And I think that's, you see that heart change, and that's the final point where like, okay, this is where it all turns. Because they've been led to that repentance point.
Mm. I just find like the character of the brothers, instead of like, you know, hiding away or going back, they were like, oh no, we actually need to go to Joseph and say, no, this wasn't us. Like, we're innocent. We didn't do any of this. Literally, they were like, oh, but we like gave you more. Like, we came with the 20 silver coins, but then also like more from the land of Canaan that we came
honest.
From. They were being honest and like coming clean, being like, no, but this really wasn't us. Because they obviously didn't want their dad to die if Joseph took the younger brother, which then swiftly leads on to a point, I think, Izzy, that you want to make.
Yeah. I mean, chapter 44 from verse 18 all the way until verse 34, like pretty much the entire second half of this chapter is all just Judah begging with Joseph to let the younger brother go free in place of any of the brothers. In fact, he even goes so far as to say, take me specifically rather than my younger brother, because he's a deeply valued person in our family, in our community. And I think there's two kind of interesting things here. One is the change from an individualistic mindset and heart posture to one of community and self-service towards others.
Love that.
Which I think is so at the heart of the gospel and really God's heart, is to take us from a place of serving ourselves and living a life in which we are the center to a place where we live and act and breathe for the benefit of those around us and to love those that are closest to us. And I think that's just such a powerful image. And then the second thing is that fact that Jesus is obviously from the tribe of Judah. Mm-hmm. And so Jesus, the one who is the most self-sacrificial, is almost like pictured in this story as Judah is a type of Jesus who restores to community and gives of himself so that we can go free.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. And I think it is that, again, it's all reaching to the point of who knows what happens next. We won't know this episode. But it's again, this final point of it, sacrificial love, where it's like, oh, I can see the heart change. And I wrote a little note that it's for Judah, which is like years of hurt from his father's favor towards like not him. Yet his heart is changed to care about the father who wounded him so deeply.
Wow.
Where actually even though he's been so hurt by that favor, he is now here being like, take my life because that's how deeply I care. Mm. And I think that's why Joseph did all these tests and didn't just go, oh, I'm Joseph, hi, which may actually, one of the commentaries said how much he probably wanted to do that, wanted to be like, I'm your brother, I'm here, I'm alive. But instead, the Holy Spirit guided him to actually lead them to this point. Up until the next point, which is next episode.
Yeah, next episode.
But I think it's just beautiful, again, to see this story coming together of such deep hurt and brokenness and family breakdown and feuds and like lack of hope and empty promises, and actually see how it's all fulfilled. And like God often works quite in a roundabout way where things do come back round.
Yeah.
And so actually seeing that come together in a real life, real family story, I think it's just incredible that can read that.
It's so incredible to see like God's hand over the whole situation and our whole family. Like he cares so deeply that he would go to the extent of like, thing is, I was reading and I was just like, if it wasn't for Joseph to be in the position as the second in command, Egypt wouldn't have stored all of the grain from the 7 years of fruitfulness.
Yeah.
Fruitfulness.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Fruitfulness to like store all of the wheat and all of that, all of the food for the 7 years of famine. If it wasn't for him doing that, his brothers wouldn't get to the point where they would need that food during the famine. They wouldn't even have like come into Egypt.
Yeah.
And I just love how like God's hand is over every single season. It's the same for us, like God's over every single season in our lives. When we don't think like things are adding up and things don't make sense, God is often in it.
Yeah.
And we just don't know what it's for, but God does, which is the hope that we can hold on to. Mm.
And then this is a spoiler for the next episode, but it's some of the language that Joseph uses, which is like, God placed me here in front of you. Yeah. He put me here ahead of you.
Yes.
And I think we can really see that, how God had a plan and how even God used famine and family breakdown and all this stuff to still look after his people and bring redemption and sacrificial love. So it's incredible.
Yes. Last point before we come to a close, the point that you were mentioning about Judah, the scripture, the first will be last and the last will be first, and love those above yourselves. That, like, those few verses just came to my mind. Like, in cases where we feel like I want to be first, like God is often the one that will make us first when we put others ahead of ourselves, if that makes sense. So then, I mean, that's what happened to Judah. I mean, he was hurt deeply by his dad. Imagine being like, you know, not really noticed by your dad, even though you're the firstborn, and then all the favor goes to your younger brother. Like, you're probably just going to be like, dad, what the heck? Like, you know, I'm your eldest son. Do you really not love me? I can probably imagine. Well, I don't. I actually can't imagine how hurt he was, but he probably was really hurt.
It's a lot of healing, a lot of hard work.
Exactly. A lot of hard work to get to that point, which just is incredible. How God,
we remember
that too
in our own lives. Like, there's a lot of work took place, a lot of healing, a lot of time. Yeah. It's not as instant.
Exactly.
20 years, bro.
Dude, it took 20 years.
How old will you be in 20 years?
We 42.
Ew.
Wow.
What?
Yeah.
I'm not 42 now.
I'll be 44.
Anyways, guys, thank you so much for joining. Tuning in with Zach and Izzy and Michelle. This has been an incredible episode. Tune in for the next one. last, pretty sure it's the last one, right?
Yeah.
Last episode on the Joseph character study. So tune in then, but see you later for now.
Toodles.
Toodles.